The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 28th of April, 2020. On the podcast today, I have Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. And Vadim discusses Novacyt, Synergen, GeneDrive, Hemogenics, and Polarian Imaging, all companies involved in some way in the medical field, of course, and most of those there involved in the fight against COVID-19. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV business news correspondent, now the author of The Crypto Trader, talks about his take on the market. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. If you check out these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, you see top 10 visions, and also you can see our COVID-19 index. This is an index of companies, of course, involved in the fight against the coronavirus in some way. It could be creating tests, could be developing drugs in some way, or they may be just companies who will benefit from this change in our environment at the moment, the economy, maybe the lockdown in some way. There's 28 companies there. Right now, biggest riser is 4D Pharma, up 25%, and also GeneDrive, which, of course, Vadim mentioned. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app. From voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. You all right, Vadim?
Yeah, good, Justin. How are you?
Good. Well, since we last spoke, we've been overtaken, I think. The world has been overtaken by the coronavirus, of course. It's had implications to every corner of the globe. And I've seen, because you know more than most, but there's so many healthcare companies now have pivoted and gone towards sort of helping in the fight against the virus, haven't they?
Absolutely, yes. Many companies were had some form of division or a type of research that they could repurpose towards this, and that's what we're seeing specifically in small caps on the London Stock Exchange. We've seen a lot of companies make announcements to that effect in healthcare, and it's just interesting. I think we should touch upon a few today.
Yeah, well, let's do. I've seen some. Do you know what? I mean, we've had sort of course, the stock market dropped off a cliff back in March, but it's bounced strongly, and I think down to sort of big tech companies. But also, there's been a huge rally amongst any company, any healthcare company that is, like I said, they've changed their business or restructured in some way to help in some way, either creating ventilators or tests or in some way related. So, let's touch on a few. Because I mean, at Vox, by the way, we've actually set up a COVID index. So it's about 28 companies that are linked in some way may benefit from the lockdown. Touch on a few. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's various areas, broad areas involving testing. And then you're right. So that's one area of medical devices. devices is developing tests like to diagnose the virus, and obviously for in the future, and I think it's already being rolled out, tests that will diagnose antibodies to the virus, so meaning that you've had it, so we can test whether a person has had the virus or not. So testing is a big area, and there are several London-listed stocks in that space. One in particular is Novacyt. I think you may have touched on it in the past. It's a company that's, you know, had an incredible share price rally, and in many respects, I think, well deserved. It's actually one of the few companies that reacted very, very quickly to the need for testing. And so they developed a test early on in the process, you know, right when it was starting in China. And the reason they were able to do that is because they were involved in infectious disease testing previously, and knew how quickly these things develop, as in these pandemics or these breakouts develop. So they were involved in MERS testing and SARS-1 testing. So they were quick to move. And as is often the case with smaller companies, compared to, say, the big diagnostics manufacturers like Roche and Abbott, they were nimble and reacted quickly and started producing the test quickly and had a very high precision test, because theirs is a molecular diagnostic, it's a high precision test, and has proven continued to be so, and they continue to refine the test further and make sure it stays as precise, because obviously the virus might mutate. So they keep, you know, they've done everything right as a firm, and now they're really reaping the benefits of that, because their test is highly in demand. They're selling it to governments around the world, including the UK government. And they're, you know, if there's a place where they would be struggling, is just to find enough capacity to fill demand. And the demand is just overwhelming. Right now, they're aiming to get, this is just a metric that's worth noting to investors, capacity up from 4 million tests a month to 8 million tests a month. And if you look at, you know, the per test, we estimate, I mean, the company, this isn't the company's number, this is our number, but, you know, if you're selling the test at anywhere between $5 and $10 a unit, at somewhere between 70-80% gross margin, maybe even 60% under these circumstances, it doesn't really matter. We're talking about big numbers here. So, you know, is the rally in Novacyt share price justified? Yes, I think so. You'll see it elsewhere in other stocks.
Just to Novacyt there, yeah, I've got to say, because a lot of people have asked me whether I've invested in Novacyt. I said, well, listen, I know they've done fantastic work. They've hooked up with all the governments and big pharma companies, and they seem to be doing all right. Their share price, though, like I said, it's gone from, you know, 16 pence on January the 30th to now £4.10. So, it's more than 20 bags, and their valuation is what, about, I think, 300 million or something like that. So, it's hard to know, you know, the value. So, it's interesting you put those figures there, because I don't know if they've actually published any figures around their margins or how much. Do you know specifically how much these tests cost to produce and how much they sell them for?
So, no, we have estimates. So these are our estimates. So, you know, again, caveat that by it's what we estimate these tests are selling for. But, you know, ballpark figure, where we get this from is they had a research use test previously. And that I think we looked up and found that it was about $5 a unit. For clinical use, you would imagine it's selling for higher. But we don't have precise figures, because a lot of this stuff is, I imagine, confidential, because they're selling to governments. Governments are outbidding each other for them. A lot of governments are paying up front to secure the tests. I mean, suffice it to say that we know how difficult it is to get our hands on tests here in the UK. You know, our own government is struggling to get these tests, and you know, the government is working with Novacyt. So, you know, it is difficult to ascertain specifically what these. They're selling them in bulk, so it's hard to say what they're actually getting. And I imagine every contract is slightly different. But if you look at the previous test that they were selling, the research use only test, you know, it was selling at about $5 a unit. So, you know, it could be substantially higher. We just don't know. Normal margins, and then where we get our margins from, is normal margins in diagnostic testing are about, run between 60 and 80% gross margin, which is a great margin. I mean, it's, you know, you could expect that kind of level, I would say. So, yeah, I mean, if you look at 4 million tests a month, let's say hypothetically, just to keep numbers round, at $10 a test, that's a big number. Yeah, well, do you see what I mean?
Do you know, I've been very conservative here. I've said, and even then it looks very good if they're doing that. So I've said, you know, $5 a test, right? 12 months of the year, that's $240 million. It's 60% margin, $144 million, you know, in profit there. Of course, that's dollars, but we don't know if they'll be, you know, shifting these for 12 months. That's $4 million per month for 12 months. That's on a 12-month basis, of course. So as yet, it may slow down a bit.
Exactly. I mean, these are all, I completely agree with you, Justin. Look, these are all, we all have the and I agree with you. That's all we can do is these back of envelope type of analyses because, you know, we don't have a report specific on the actual test cost and, you know, but ballpark, it's not hard to imagine why these, you know, the share price has rallied so much. A couple of things we don't know. You're right. We don't know how long this is going to last, although to caveat that as well, governments are not only just testing, you know, their population, but they're also going to probably be stockpiling to make sure they don't get caught out again if there is a second wave. So, you know, there's all kinds of reasons to believe that this will go on for some time. But nonetheless, you know, there is an element of a one-time big blip. It's the big that I emphasize because there's just such an overwhelming demand for these tests. I mean, we're talking about millions and millions and tens of millions of tests requirement. Well, hundreds of millions, you know, ultimately.
Do you know what I'm saying? Exactly. Do you know what? It's a huge amount of demand coming in. And to be honest, until we get a vaccine, you know, these antibody and antigen tests are quite big anyway. They're going to be quite big. They've got to keep testing and testing and testing until a vaccine comes. So, yeah, it's massive. But I mean, it looks good, like I said, but they've rallied very strongly of late. My only concern is when you have to ramp up like this, your capital costs go up. Unless you can scale and it doesn't cost you any more, which is very rare unless you're a software company, surely the capital costs would increase somewhat, wouldn't it?
You would expect so. But I mean, right now they're looking, they're outsourcing part of the manufacturing to other companies like Yourgene is another beneficiary of this, another listed business on AIM. And you know, they're working with some pretty big partners, you know what I mean? So it's elsewhere, you know, with the government themselves. So it's there is a capital cost, you're absolutely correct, but it's a proper use of capital because just the demand is overwhelming, you know. And then you could repurpose some of that for future tests, you know, for future testing. So I guess the ultimate point is there is just not enough capacity right now. We're just not able to produce enough tests globally.
Novacyt have done it really well. I mean, the CE mark back in January, and these other companies are just following that now. And like I said, they've. Someone mentioned to me early on, and I didn't take a stake, I mean, because I like to do some research. And this is such a fast moving market. It's perfect for the traders, you know, traders who got a whiff of this at the start and just jumped into it. And some people have done very well. I don't know how well people do, because when this share price rises like crazy, I see a lot of people say they jumped in early, but also jumped out early. And that's the thing, it's hard to hold on when you see a company's share price rise so quickly, you take profit, don't you? Most people do, you know.
And, it is very hard.
Apart from directors, maybe, I don't know who actually stuck in there from the bottom to the top here, but I don't know.
it's very difficult. I agree with you to time markets and things. I mean, I'll give you another example. Another company in the diagnostic space, Gene Drive, is another listed business. You know, it's up, I think, from a low of 6p, and now it's pushing 80p. Again, on the promise of a COVID test alone. You know, they're supposed to get their test first test developed in the you know, probably in about a month's time, and then they have a second point of care version that's coming out in several months' time. So, you know, just on that, the share price has gone up almost 10 times. So, you know, we're seeing substantial interest in testing, and testing is just one area. You know, there's other areas. So drug development is another area. You know, a couple of companies to mention, Synergen. I think, you know, you may have heard a bit about. They're developing a drug for, it's called interferon beta. It's an inhaled version. The WHO is currently testing interferon in one of their big trials. It's called the Solidarity trials. So, you know, interferon is an immune modulator. They think the virus may downgrade the production of interferon in lung cells. So basically, the whole idea here is that one of the viral immune evasion techniques is we're trying to reverse it through this drug. So Synergen has done quite well on, you know, also recently. They're right in the area. They were already developing this for the area of COPD, so another lung disease. And, you know, it just so happens that this area, is, you know, there's overlap between the two areas in terms of lung infections. So a viral lung infection specifically. So they were really well-placed to... They changed their trial, basically. They stopped their COPD trial and started a new trial in COVID. And as a result, they've seen a tremendous share price increase. I mean, their stock went from 5 or 6 P again to about 60 P. You know, so another 10-time return. Another company, Hemogenix, just very recently, this is in the last couple of days, announced that they're going to start work. They have they do work using their – and I won't get too technical here. But they use they have a mouse model, so for preclinical testing of antibodies or identifying antibodies. Here in this case, it's neutralizing antibodies. So you're developing antibodies against the virus, and you're trying to find the best ones. You know, the ones that protect you or that could protect patients in the future. So, you know, again, another area where the company is repurposing its current research towards COVID, and rightly so. I mean, they also are right in the middle of a part of the research program of these drug companies. So, perfect example, their stock price again is up, you know, substantially over the last couple of days. I think they hit a low of 9p only just 2-3 weeks ago, and now they're 0.9p, and now they're 6p. You know, so up 6 or 7 times. You know, the story goes on and on. There are many other companies. So that's drug development. You know, in the area of devices, you know, there's, for example, Plarium is a company that you and I have discussed in the past. Now, admittedly, Plarium, they're not discussing a COVID-specific angle, and nor should they until they have some clinical, you know, support for such a thing. But they're in the area of pulmonary imaging. You know, they're in the right place. They are in the future probably will be seeing some patient follow-up. And there might be publications in the future in some of the units that are being used out there. I'm kind of skipping a few steps here, but you remember Plarium, what they do is medical imaging of the lung using xenon gas. And it's kind of a unique technology in terms of how well you can model a lung function. So basically, in the case of Plarium, you can foresee one day that someone somewhere is going to use this technology potentially to model how patients were impacted by COVID. And if there is a long-term impact to COVID lung damage, that's one area where you know you can see a future use of this technology. You know, the list goes on. There are many companies that have potential in the area that have already either announced some kind of work on the area or that are right in the middle of it, like in the case of Novacyt or Synergen or Hemogenix.
Yeah. Well, I think Synergen are local to me because they're in Southampton, aren't they? So they're quite close to me. But Plarium, you mentioned there, very interesting that actually, because if we don't, now, people are assuming we will find a vaccine for this. And it's not that sometimes it's not easy to find a vaccine, is it? It can take a long time. And people are saying, 12 to 18 months, they assume it's nailed on, but that's not the case. It may not be the case. And if it's not the case, like you said, Plarium very well placed to look at the damage COVID-19 could do to lung function, I suppose. And then that would spur some antivirals or development, wouldn't it, I suppose?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, in the case of Plarium, so what's important to know is Plarium themselves, you know, they're talking to the FDA right now, like as in they're still on course for their own plan, which is, you know, to get their drug device combination approved by the FDA. And that's all going to plan, to my knowledge, anyways, all on the latest timeline. You know, they did a capital raise not that long ago, raised a substantial amount for Plarium, about $11 million. And more importantly, they got a partner on board, well, a strategic investor, sorry, that invested as well. And this is the company, if you remember, Jonathan Ellis, the CEO of Blue Earth Diagnostics, which he sold to a company called Bracco. Well, Bracco, and that was sold for $450 million. Jonathan Ellis is now the chairman of Plarium, just to reiterate, and Bracco have just put in about £2 million into Plarium as part of the last round. So that bodes well standalone. I mean, that's a great result for Plarium, and they're doing just fine as is. The COVID thing is just me mentioning how certain medical technologies in the future, you know, there might be an angle here. The company, you know, that rightly so, they're looking at, you know, proof, evidence-based, you know, they need to demonstrate, in the future, if there is something to demonstrate, you need to demonstrate that your technology works against that, right? So that's all very important. That's the only way to do things. All I'm saying is, in the future, you might see some, you remember for those who are following the story, they have some 25 research units out there, and all these people are doing research on various areas. It's not unfathomable to think that one day maybe someone will do some research on COVID. And then you'll get that empirical evidence if they publish papers on it, and if there is a way, there is something, some use for the technology in terms of analyzing, lung function as a result of COVID infection. Probably this is, again, something I can see is less in the diagnostic space of the disease, but more in the long-term functioning of post-disease. Because what we are hearing, and again, this is anecdotal, so there's no, the importance of getting the evidence is quite, I cannot emphasize that more. But it is, there is some part of the consequences of severe COVID infection is potential fibrosis in the lung, and that may cause long-term lung damage. We already know that Plarence technology is being used or looked at it from a fibrosis of the lung angle. So this is an area called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, IPF. It's not difficult to see how that may have a function in the future in analyzing whether how COVID patients are doing post-infection if they have a severe infection and fibrosis of the lung. That's one example. One example. Yeah.
Exactly. And do you know what? This could become evident. I know it sounds a bit obvious, but it's amazing how, impairment of the lung function affects people's lives. And you've seen how many ventilators have been needed to get lungs working because they're filling up with all kinds of, fluid and stuff. But it's so essential to a healthy life, having a healthy lung function. And you realize how important it is, just the lung, is part of the body. If that goes down, that's it, So it's so important, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the most important thing in all of this, and I think, we are seeing share prices move up quickly here, there, and there, and, is that, and this is where I think Plarence is doing the right thing, is it's very important, and we see this with Trump, and we see this with some other politicians, and we've seen how badly it fails. Evidence-based, science, basically science advances on strong evidence, right? So we need to actually demonstrate that these things work. And that's, I think that's the most important thing to remember here, because you are seeing some share prices rally maybe a bit too strongly. We're seeing maybe a bit of an overreaction. And I'm not going to point where, I just think it is important to remember that it's all based on the evidence, right? So we need to watch that carefully. And as these companies develop their technologies or their drugs, we need to watch how the data comes in. That's the most important.
Marvelous stuff, Vadim. Very insightful as always. And hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman, author of The Crypto Trader. And I didn't know this. Your Facebook page, The Shares Guy, became the biggest trading page in the world. In the world, really?
In the world for a while, yeah.
What do you mean in the world? What's the kind of figures in that? What did you have?
It had about 250,000 followers, which is around about what it has now. Basically, as soon as it became the biggest trading page in the world, which is what, about three years ago or so, I then got bored of expanding it and doing good things with it. And as a result, it kind of, I just let it lie fallow. I mean, I still posted on it sometimes, but I wasn't making the effort anymore. This is quite an admission I'm making in public here, but I just stopped making so much of an effort and I allowed other trading pages to overtake it. So now it's no longer the biggest in the world.
Well, I know someone who's making a good revenue off, Facebook page trading,
I haven't
strategies.
Even done that.
All that stuff.
I haven't done any of that because I feel, to be honest, I feel a bit icky about that kind of thing. Trading strategies, charging and all
what
that.
What I understand is they charge, right? More than Netflix do for a month. And they're earning, a very, very decent wage out of it. And that's your strategies, though. And it says here also...
No, I could have made a fortune, Justin, out of that. I mean, maybe I still could, but it's just, as I say, I feel a bit uncomfortable about that whole idea of charging people subscription fees to listen to my market calls and so on. I mean, part of it is because I know that, sometimes I'm wrong and sometimes I'm right, which is fine because that's the way I make money trading, is by making a lot more money when I'm right than I lose when I'm wrong. That's how most professional traders make their money, is not by being right all the time, but by being very right when they are right and not so wrong by cutting their losses quickly when they are wrong. But I mean, one of the things is I feel a bit uncomfortable about if I'm charging people money, subscriptions, then people are going to start complaining whenever I get something wrong. And that's going to mess with my trading head and might mess with my process. That worries me as well, I think.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I mean, do you know what you find Americans are good at charging? And you know, they don't care if it's wrong or right. To me, it's a business. Yeah. It's a business.
No,
you're charging. All I do is I do the weekly sort of YouTube video, and I think I show what I'm holding, and I'll show my updates every quarter. I'll try and show my updates and how my stock's doing, and that way, if I'm doing well, I get more followers. If I don't, it's take or leave it. I have systems that I use. You know, I try and be organised about it and trying to approach it like an investor. I'm not a trader, an investor. And so, I got 2,600 subscribers. I suppose that just shows. No, but you know what? It's
almost a start, like, isn't it?
But the thing is, I don't do it for that. You know, I'm not hoping to earn a living off YouTube, because I've done decently well. I've done 11 years of profitable, you know, investing every year. I don't know how this year is going to turn out, because this has been a bit of a car crash, dropping so fast as it did. But luckily, yeah. I did have a bit of cash on the side. So, I hopefully want to make this year profitable as well. You know, it was 12 years of trading, and I want to say I've gone through the financial crisis and the COVID, the coronavirus crisis, and made a profit every year. Hopefully, I mean, at the moment, I need to up my holdings because I'm still about 60% cash. It's hard to sort of do very well off just holding 40% holdings. But I mean, you know, there we go. This rally is crazy, isn't it? At the moment, I still expect to see a big sell-off, because I mean, you know, if you look at the figures, every big sort of economist or and the World Bank or the IMF or the Bank of England are saying this could be the biggest recession for like the last 100 years, and yet we're only now, the S&P is like 12% down from all-time highs. It doesn't make any sense. I know the Fed are pumping like crazy, but it doesn't make any sense to me. We've got to have a fallback soon, surely.
I reckon we'll have the fallback as soon as, you know how it traditionally works, as soon as the last hater so basically gets on board and gives
everyone's
up.
Everyone's got to be in. I mean, that's
and you, maybe you're that last hater. No, maybe you should wait until you say, look, I give up. Okay, it's going up. It's the last holdout, basically. It's the last person who thinks that what's irrational is irrational. Because it is irrational, you're quite right. And you're right to call it out as irrational. But historically, with market booms, whether it's the stock market or the housing market, it's only when the last kind of expert starts to go, okay, I give up. I know I've been saying this is crazy, and it is crazy, but I'm getting on board anyway. That they're kind of the last person in, and then the whole house of cards falls apart.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's got to be, I did say a while back, you know, that we won't sell off until the bears turn more bullish, you know, and that's when we sell, because, and the fact is, the higher the market goes, the more risk there is. You know, if we're looking at, you know, I did do a video on this. The S&P, for example, is trading on 21 times earnings. Now, how can it do that? And it's still there. You know, how can it do that when there's going to be no earnings in the second quarter? It's like, it can't do that. You've got to basically take a quarter out of that. Maybe people are thinking, okay, we've got enough stimulus anyway. The Fed are buying. Plus, next year, hopefully, return to norm. Who knows about that, though? Again, some big unknowns here. We've got to pretty much perform perfectly for this to work out, because we're assuming we'll get a vaccine. We're assuming we'll get some antivirals. We're assuming testing all goes well. Everything's planned, you know, priced in. It's assuming we transition back to normal quite quickly. But I don't think we are.
It's highly unlikely we'll go back to normal. But the stimulus cash, that's what's pushing up the market. It worked post-2009. And so everybody's thinking, well, it's going to work even better this time because they're pumping in even more money this time. So, you know, we had a 10-year market rally pretty much off the back of the stimulus money post 2009, the quantitative easing. And bear in mind that most major economies, including the US economy, were rising reasonably sluggishly over the past decade or so. It's not been a vintage decade for economic growth. And yet the stock market was pumping like crazy for most of that time. And likewise, I guess people are thinking this time the same will happen again. The stimulus money will cure all ills.
Look at this. Yesterday, I don't know if you go that you can go to the Fed website, the Federal Reserve, Fred is called, you know,
yeah,
you download
Fred.
Spreadsheets and all that stuff and look at charts.
Yes, yeah, good.
I actually downloaded the Fed's reserve assets there, you know, how much they it going up by. And if you look, they did try and, in February this year, they went down from 4.1 trillion. 4.17 trillion to 4.15 trillion. So they went down by 12.9 billion. They reduced the asset price. And all of a sudden we had this problem, of course. And then they went up to up 2%. They increased it by 82 billion. Then the next week after that, they went up 70 billion. Then they increased it by 356 billion. Then the week after that, this is the 25th or 3rd, by 586 billion. Then the 1st of April went by 557 billion. These numbers just nuts, aren't they? And then they went down a little bit. They only increased it by 271 billion. The week after that, 284 billion. And then last week, 205 billion. So I'm looking.
Oh, they're slacking.
Yeah, they are. So if you notice, though, when we started going crazy at the bottom of the cycle, they were really pumping in. So 23rd of March was the big, there was a down day, the bottom of this sell-off. That's when they were pumping in the most. And then all of a sudden, obviously, the assets had to filter through the market a little bit. And now they start easing off a bit. The S&P started easing off a little bit. It's still rising a little bit, but not as aggressively. So they are, you know, holding up the market here, by the seams. And I think, how long will they keep going on for? Because sooner or later, the true economics of what's happening here will play out, surely, you know?
Surely.
Yeah. Because this week now, another 4 million is expected in jobless claims in the US. That'll take the last 5 weeks up to 30 million Americans. That's over 20%. Of course, some of those may go back to work. It's a gross figure. Some of those may get back, you know, unfurloughed, whatever, or what happens. But that's, even if, like I said on a video recently, even if 90%, which is quite optimistic, go back to work, we're still looking at an historic high year of unemployment in America, which, again, what doesn't make sense with the stock market and the economy, and not it's divorced completely.
Indeed, but the stock market doesn't necessarily have to reflect what's going on in the real economy, apart from in the very long term. I mean, obviously, over the very long term, it always does, but you get such massive highs and lows in between, massive changes in price earnings multiples for the market as a whole between the boom and the bust in any particular decade. So, you know, it, from history, it could go a lot crazier than this. It just could, because it has done so many times before. And as I say, stimulus money is a strong story that a lot of people believe in. And even if the real economy and unemployment and so on are an absolute nightmare, people are still going to believe that the stimulus money has to end up somewhere. I mean, it does literally have to end up somewhere. And the most likely place for it to end up, rather than in people buying consumer goods, which they can't do in a great deal of at the moment due to lockdowns, and even after lockdown and so on, it's likely, I guess, that people will be reluctant to go on holiday for a while. Everybody will be a little bit nervous for a while. And so consumption is unlikely to increase that fast. I know I've changed my view on this to some degree, because I was kind of hopeful earlier on that consumption would increase very fast as soon as this was over. Now I'm thinking it's less likely, because we're going to get partial lockdowns and social distancing for quite a while. So with consumption, with money, not all the stimulus money I'm talking about, with it having a sort of block channel to feed through to consumption, it's instead going to have to find its way into the real economy in other ways. And the stock market, perhaps the housing market, but again, that's a physical market where people are going to be a little bit reluctant to go around maybe seeing houses, buying houses. I don't know, that's just my feeling. I think it's most likely to end up in financial products, and the stock market is the most obvious place. So if they keep pumping in the money, maybe the stock market can go a lot higher and you're going to get more and more nervous. And eventually, you know, like you said, you're going to have to capitulate at some point, and then, you'll be the last bull in.
No, I'll still benefit because I've got 40% in, you know, but I'm 60% yeah. out. So I've still got, you know, I own... what is it? 16 stocks and a fund, you know. But yeah. But I'm not fully exposed to them, and I work on that kind of basis. I work buying thirds, so I'm sitting pretty much on most stocks. I'm only a third in, you know. So whereas I want to come back a bit more, and I'll up myself to 2/3 in, and then I'll be majority in. So obviously,
well, I'm almost entirely out. So you know, maybe I'll end up being that last capitulator who hurriedly starts buying everything just as the thing tops out. Because what I did, you'll remember, is I sold all my holdings very early on, and I had my insurance policies as well, my put options, so that I was insured against the falling of the market. So I played the early part of it very well. I even made money rather than losing money in the early part of the crash. But then once it had hit rock bottom, you'll remember I turned bullish and I started buying again at a good time. So I was making money, but then I... like you, started thinking this new bull market can't just go on and on and on indefinitely. So I progressively started selling all the stocks that I'd bought in recent weeks. I started selling them. And now I'm almost entirely out. I've only got a few stocks left now. So I'm kind of very, very much, I'm just out of the nearly all markets now. I'm just sitting on the fence and waiting to see what happens next. With this yo-yoing up and down like it has been, I really can't call it either way. I mean, yeah, it could carry on. The market trend is still upwards, so it could just carry on going on upwards. But if you look at a daily chart, for example, of the S&P 500 or the FTSE 100, you know, it's been doing this yo-yoing thing, which doesn't really give you a very good kind of basis to decide where the trend is actually heading in the longer term. For the past decade, it's been relatively easy. It was just going up. And yeah, it would have corrections along the way, but mainly it was just going up. But this time, we've had a massive decline that's broken the back of that 10-year rising trend. And yet now we're in a position where it's heading back up seemingly to where it was before. Not quite there, but... yeah, I'm going to sit on the fence for a bit longer until I need a sign from God, or at least from you, Justin.
No, but do you know what I've said for a long time? Listen, in fact, if you go back 4 weeks, I sort of half said, I did this sort of chart, you know, on S&P. So this is the way I think it'll go. I said, we'll have it's three bits of this fallout. I mean, there's three bits of this recovery, or this bear market. First of all, there's medical fallout, which we're having at the moment, but... I said, what we'll get is the Western countries. We've had these far Eastern countries now, you know, coming out of it. It was a month to peak, a couple of weeks across, you know, trying to find a plateauing, then a month down. We're having that now. We're at the peak. We're a couple of weeks down. We're coming down now. That'll happen in America as well. So we'll have euphoria about that. The medical fallout is pretty much dropping off now. And then we'll get... you know, stimulus packages. We'll talk about reopenings of the economy. That'll help raise the stock market. But then we'll get the financial fallout, and that's the big thing. And the stock market can't be held up by the Fed on that, because essentially the stock market is a valuation. You know, it's basically everything's there valued on what they earn. Now, yeah. We've only had 2 weeks out of 12 weeks. We had 2 weeks out of 12 weeks from Q1 earnings. So that's nothing. The lockdown happened last two weeks of Q1. Now, we are right now in the middle of... mid-March, April. We've had April, mid-May, 6 weeks in. That's half, pretty much, of Q2 has been locked down. So yeah. that's 10 times as much, or 6 times as much as Q1. So the financial fallout from Q2 hasn't happened yet. We'll start seeing all these companies coming out, and pretty much maybe priced in. People don't expect good earnings. But I think when we get earnings after earnings after earnings saying we're nothing, you know, our debt's gone up, our bills are paid up, and yet we still don't have a clear path, really, to complete lifting of the lockdown. We have just a procedural, sort of slowly, you know, phased lifting. That when we don't have a clear path to that, there are companies who, you know, have earned no revenue in Q2, pretty much, and as yet, looking at the phase lifting, like you've got, you know, airlines like EasyJet and you've got restaurants, they can't exist on a phase. They can't just take, you know, a third of their seats out. If they do, they can't earn a profit, and it's not social distance in any way, so they have a clear path to how they're going to earn money like they did before. So I think when we get that, there's no transparency as to how these big companies are going to earn money. I think we'll have the, you know, not only will we have bad earnings, but we'll have no clear outlook, you know, as to how they're going to get back to
normal. But as we said last week, we're not going to probably get the really bad earnings coming through until about July. That'll be when, you know, we get those earnings announcements.
You may get a trading update beforehand saying, hang on, this is going to be bad. Expect yourself to break some strapping. You know, so we may get that beforehand.
But I guess that's already kind of assumed anyway by a lot of people, that all these companies, it's only when you get the actual earnings results, maybe that will be when the big shock comes. And what if the stock market just rises until then? We could have another 3 months of the stock market just rising and rising and rising until you finally get those definite earnings figures in July, which basically make a lot of people sort of dunk their head in a bowl of cold water and look at the price earnings ratios and go, hang on, these price earnings ratios are now ridiculous, now that we've got official earnings figures for the second quarter showing how terrible it really is. Maybe that will wake up a lot of people, and maybe that could be the top. I'm saying a lot of maybes here, and that's why I'm sitting on the fence, and that's why you're mostly out of stock, 60% out of the market, because, you know, it doesn't necessarily make sense to be in the market and have a position all the time. This is the way I look at it. You know, I'm a long-term trader. I've been doing this for 20 years. You've been doing it for around about the same time, I guess.
80 years. I've been doing it, son. 80 years to the day.
And, you know, the thing is, there are, as you know and I know, there are endless opportunities to make money in the market. And if you miss one opportunity, there are plenty more that come along. And the way I look at it is, okay, so the market's still rising, but it could drop like a stone at any second. We all know that. You could just get some horrible piece of news about COVID deaths having rocketed unexpectedly. And the market could drop 10% in a day.
Do you see the stats out today from ONS?
No.
So the ONS have recorded the actual deaths down to COVID-19, you know, recorded on the... This is
About the care homes?
Yeah, from care homes everywhere.
Yes, I saw that. So listen,
the difference is worrying. I said that, tweeted out, on the 17th of April, this was, up until the 17th of April, the ONS recorded 53% more deaths than the Department for Health, and also, which 39% more deaths than the NHS England. So they see it's, what was it? They got 21,284 on 17th of April. And that's hang on, where are we now? So we've done over, we were the worst in the world, by the looks of it.
We're doing pretty badly in terms of deaths, but I mean,
I hate to put this in the league table.
Frankly, the markets are going to follow what happens in America, though. So when I said we might get some terrible announcement about deaths, I'm thinking that announcement has to come from America. That's the only country that really determines how the world's stock markets will react in a major way. So, you know, you need an announcement out of there that something terrible has happened. And as I say, the market could plummet 10%, even 15% in a day. In this kind of market environment, that would not be wholly unexpected. So that's why I'm sitting on the sidelines, because even though, there's a fair chance, as we've described, that the market could just continue rising and rising and rising for months, the risk is rather great compared to the potential rewards. And as a trader or even an investor, you always need to weigh up the risk against the reward. And as I see it, the risks are enormous of a sudden turnaround. If I were to buy loads of stocks right now, I might make a fair amount of money over the next few months, but I might lose an absolute fortune overnight while I'm asleep. You know, wake up in the morning, as we did just weeks ago, you'd wake up in the morning and find that the market had dropped 5 to 10% overnight before, you know, with the US markets even being closed at the time. They were just dropping the far east.
When that happens, you've got to be prepared to realize it's an opportunity, have a cash on the side. But do you know what? I also point out
that's why I've got all my cash on the side. I'm waiting.
I point out on the weekend is that if you're an investor, it's a stock market. Yeah, it's called a stock market, but it's a market of stocks. I bought a stock today. I bought two yesterday, but I only just scaled in because I individually, looking at their balance sheets, what they're earning, what they're predicted to earn, I think they're quite cheap. And I've only put obviously a third of my initial exposure into them, but I think I'm looking at a three-year horizon here, and I'm thinking I wouldn't be able to pick these up. Hopefully, there'll be volatility, of course, and maybe it'll get a bit more cheaper if we have a big sell-off, but over the next 3 years, I don't think I'll get these at a good level at the moment. So again,
well, you say that, but remember what we were just talking about. You know, first of all, you're going to get bad results for
hang on, and this is what I'm
unless
saying.
Unless these are like
hang on a second. That's what I'm saying.
All right.
That's what I'm saying. You've got to look at companies that are going to be able to reopen and get back to normalcy or normal levels.
Yeah.
Even in the red light, you know, this amber, they've used this traffic light system, red light. So if you look at house builders, they're going to be going back to sort of starting building again this month. Obviously, you've got the EasyJets. No point, EasyJet. I can't see them ever getting back to normal. And it's the vaccine. People assume there's going to be a vaccine. Listen, it's not that easy, you know. If you look at most stuff, a vaccine, 12, 18 months, we'll get a vaccine. No. You know, the common cold hasn't got a vaccine. The SARS and MERS didn't get a vaccine. There's lots of, you know, I watch small cap companies who are going through clinical phase 1, 2, and 3. They always fail, you know, but it's pretty much nailed on. The chances of going from phase 1 to phase 3 and getting commercial success is like, sorry, it's less than 10%, 10 to 1 chance. So I know there's more money going into this, but everyone assumes there's going to be a vaccine. Now, if there's not a vaccine, there'd be loads of industries. So you have to be very particular in what you're picking. You know, you can't just pick any old company, because can they go back to working even if a vaccine doesn't, and some of the companies I invest in can, they can do online, you know, all that stuff. So that's what you look at, you know, how will they be affected by this?
All right, well, I mean, talking of that, here's a sense in which the market actually is more rational, perhaps, than we've been giving it credit for. If you look at America and you look at what companies are actually making the running here and which ones are making new highs and all the rest of it. Yeah, exactly. It's like Amazon, Netflix. It is literally the kind of companies that are doing well and will probably continue to do well, even with coronavirus still going on. So, you know, the market's not being utterly crazy. It is tending to specialize in those tech companies. Also, Nvidia has been doing very well as well.
What about Bitcoin? What's happening there?
Oh, yes. We haven't even mentioned it, have we? Yeah. Bitcoin is actually doing very well. It's still kind of moving in, not exactly in lockstep, but in high correlation with the stock market. So basically, whatever the stock market does, Bitcoin seems to be doing much the same. And for that same reason, I'm out of Bitcoin at the moment. I'm sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what happens next.
The trouble is, it's rallied, isn't it? But it hasn't rallied to that pre-fall off the cliff level. Do you remember on the 12th of March? Like that was.
But it's right there, though.
Yeah, right there. Close up there, yeah. Where it dropped.
If it gets above there, then that could be very exciting. You know, you could see one of those massive rallies in Bitcoin, because as you say, it is hovering there right at that crucial level. And we know, you know, from charts generally, going back to who knows when, that when a market does recover back to the point where it fell off a cliff, it often hesitates, as it is doing right now. Bitcoin just sort of hovering there on the brink, trying to decide whether or not it can break through that big level where it fell off a cliff in March. And we know historically that when markets do break through that level, they often race ahead after that, because that was the resistance where there are a lot of sellers, a lot of people wanting to sell at this point. And once you've sort of broken the back of those sellers, then sky is often the limit. So that may well be a place where I would buy.
What are you waiting for then? What are you waiting for particularly?
I'm waiting for it to break through that level, because of course it might not, as is often the case with these kind of things. Yeah, once it breaks through the level, it can soar. But it's not necessarily going to break through that level. As I say, there are a lot of sellers at this point.
Do you short?
A lot of people wanting to sell at the same point. I do sometimes short, but I'm erring on the side of caution these past weeks. Hmm. And for that reason, unless I see a really great short opportunity open up in Bitcoin, I mean, it might. If it starts plummeting rapidly, I may open a short just to make some short-term profit. Yeah. But I will play it by ear. I will be playing this minute by minute.
I think at the moment the market's ripe for shorting. I mean, generally, I mean, I don't do that. I don't do indices. I mean, it's a stock market one. You know, it's an individual. It's a market of stocks, and all stocks are different.
Yeah.
You know, they may rise on tides, but some rise further than others. Others don't. You know, like I said, I think there are opportunities always. But yeah,
well, put it this way: there's a Bitcoin whale. Have you heard of these? They call them Bitcoin. Yeah, they call them the Bitcoin whales. People who made a lot of money in Bitcoin early on because they were tech guys mainly who bought it when it was 1p or whatever, 1 cent, and made millions and millions of dollars. And often they're anonymous as well, like the one I'm thinking of who I've just been reading about. He doesn't say who he really is. But he has opened a Bitcoin short some weeks ago and, you know, expecting the market to crash like you. And it's continued going up and up and up, and he's now apparently $12 million down.
Oof, oof.
That's a bit of pill to swallow.
If you're a whale, you can swallow a big pill.
Well, I don't know how big a whale is. When we say whale, are we talking George Soros type or Jeff Bezos type levels?
An actual whale, I was thinking. A whale's got a big mouth. You know, they can swallow big pills.
Well, that's true. They swallow Noah. Was it Noah? No, hold on. No, Noah.
Pinocchio.
Jonah. Yeah. Swallowed him.
I think we've gone off tangent a little bit. But
so it's nice to end on a biblical reference, I think.
No, I fear there's end on this because it's a nice cheery note. I fear him for a massive fall. No, I do. No, genuine, I do. It's quite easy to get carried away with this rally, and I've been buying, but I've been careful not to buy stocks that are hot. I know that I think they have plenty of run in them for the next 2 years. But I genuinely think we're in for... you don't get V-shaped recoveries unless it's artificial. Like I said, the Fed's been pumping like crazy. I'm waiting for that fall-off and retesting and the worry, because we know...
Then shouldn't you sell your stocks then?
No, because I'm edging in. I expect... When I buy my first bit of stock, I expect to get them at a cheaper level. So three buys, pretty much. My first buy is in what they call a marker shot. When you put a shot in, and you're shooting targets, you know? It's a marker.
Yeah, but if things are as bad as we're saying, which
they
are.
I don't know if they are.
If economic conditions continue to be absolutely terrible, and there's, let's face it, at least a pretty large chance that that will be the case, then the market could conceivably fall like 50% from where it is now. I mean,
I'm trying to get you to question your whole thing. You're right. I just realised, right?
Yeah.
Look at this. We are now near levels on the S&P and all that stuff where before this happened, right? So what we're saying, essentially, is if we get a vaccine for this tomorrow, the market should be not far from where we are here. So, but we haven't.
It's we're like, not going to, yeah.
I know that's nuts, really, isn't it, when you think of it like that? It's like, yeah,
it is.
That's crazy.
Remember the Great Depression? I always like to say it to remind people that history can be very, very cruel. That the stock market in America fell by 90%. 90. Okay? That's not like holding on to your shares and hoping for a better price kind of fall. That is like if you hold a lot of shares, then your life is over kind of fall. So, okay, that was 100 years ago almost, and we haven't had anything on that scale since then. But I always still like to dangle it in front of people just to remind them that, as we've seen with coronavirus, history can unleash unexpected and catastrophic things from time to time, and it's better to be safe than sorry. So... Yeah, you know, I'm not saying everyone needs to be on the sidelines like me, but I'm just saying be cautious.
I do think we have a more flexible economy now, an economy that can work, you know, from home like we've seen. And also, like I said, we're lucky this virus isn't killing everyone. You know, it's literally, I mean, it's obviously unfortunate whoever dies, and but it's people generally of older age and with health complications.
Yeah,
and so why we're locked in lockdown is to stop the NHS being paralysed and preventing any other operation happening. So if the NHS is paralysed, then we'll just find general deaths and the population will go up because people, you know, can't get into A&E, they can't get an ICU bed, so everyone will suffer. You can't get, if you break your leg now, you can't get a place. So that's what they're preventing doing that. So they can ease the lockdown to stop the economy dying as long as we have capacity in the NHS, you know. So that's the main reason. So on a bright scale, we have got capacity. We've got plenty of capacity, apparently. So I think now they start easing, but they have to. I think they were so strict about companies who are not social distancing and not adhering to the rules. I think massive fines. If you could, yes, you can reopen, but social distance when you can. If you can work from home, work from home, and also you know, wash your hands. There's only two ways of catching it: people breathing it or touching something, and then putting their mouth to their hands to their mouth. So I think massive fines, very strict on people who are not adhering to social distancing and all that stuff. So
wash your hands, you say? I haven't heard that one before. I must try that.
Yeah. Try and wash your hands at least once a year. and even the rest of your body sometimes, if you want to, but not once a year.
No, I'm not going to go that far.
Not once a year, that's excessive. I say once every couple of years for that.
Yeah.
Marvellous, Glenn. Thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
Okay,
it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Empire Metals, down 24% at 1.4 pence. At 4, 4D Pharma, just mentioned them, up 25% at 69.25. At 3, Avacta Group, up 6.5% at 106.5. At 2, Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals, up 88.51% to 8.2 pence. And number 1, it's Amiga Diagnostics, non-mover at the moment, 60.5%. Unusual, that, because they do move quite a bit of late. Well, they have moved quite a bit of late. Okay, top five most liked or most read RNSs are as follows. Rockfire Resources at 5, New Area of Mineralization Adjacent to Plateau. At 4, European Metal Holdings, CES investment in Cinevec project completed. At 3, Amiga Diagnostics, Visitec, CD4 Advanced Disease Supply Agreement. At 2, Visarin, 2D Tech Award granted, And Bidstack is number 1 with further details re Lumen Research Study. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.